Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
Good evening, folks. Glad you could join us for the Big Red Bench on this Sunday evening. Really glad you could join us right here with you until 7 o'clock. We have a packed show coming your way between now and 7 p.m. Over the next hour, we're going to be talking to Moss Finn about Ireland's narrow win over Scotland and how that sets them out going to face England next week at the Aviva Stadium. Going to talk to Cork City Chairman Declan Carey about preparations for the upcoming season. We have the second part of our interview with Phil Healy. She looks ahead to the Olympics. We're talking to Cork PRO Joseph Blake later on as well about the Rebels Bounty, which has been a huge success for all the clubs so far. And we're talking MMA as well with Corkman Darren O'Gorman, who returns to action with Cage Warriors next week. You're listening to The Big Red Bench right here on Cork's Red FM. A really busy show coming your way between now and 7 p.m. If you'd like to get in touch, tweet us at Big Red Bench. You can text us as well, 0868104106, and on WhatsApp. All right, going to kick off the show with Ireland's win over Scotland. Going to hear from Moss Finn in just a second, but first, a full-time report from Stuart Cameron.
Is tight, but Ireland have got over the line. Scotland 24, Ireland 27 is how it ended at Murrayfield. Ireland deserving their half-time lead of 14-10, with Sexton's three penalty goals adding to Henshaw's try, with Scotland's points all coming from Finn Russell, courtesy of a try conversion and a penalty. Ireland came out of the blocks flying in the second half, 10 unanswered points, thanks to a Ty Byrne converted try and a Sexton penalty, but converted tries from Hugh Jones and Hamish Watson made it 24 apiece. With 3 minutes to go, Sexton came up, kicked his fifth penalty, and he won it for Ireland. A real pressure kick from the Irish captain. Scotland's set piece let them down today. The high penalty count as well. Even though they won the try count 3-2, they've lost the match, and Ireland have sneaked it. Scotland 24, Ireland 27.
All right, for more on Ireland's that narrow win over Scotland, and joined by our good friend Moss Finn. Moss, they got away with that one, as my late grandfather Owen would say. They were haunted.
We were haunted, absolutely. It was an extraordinary game. A game in parts where Ireland played extremely well, and in parts where Ireland played extremely badly. All in all, a great result, obviously, but there were some great points and some very negative points, but as you say, we got away with it, but and at this level, a win is a win.
Certainly is. Where would we be without Johnny Sexton? That was an incredible kick under pressure.
He stood up, in fairness to him. He's a fantastic bit of stuff. He's coming to the twilight of his career, and they even remarked afterwards in the interviews there that the interviewer was mentioning his grey hair on the sides of his head. But he's a world-class player and always has been. You know, he had a few rough years there in France, and that's with the head injuries and all those kind of things, but you know, when coming to you, coming to man, he stood up, and even he admitted afterwards he didn't strike it as well as he wanted to, but it went over, and he said the kicking was quite difficult there with the swirling wind, but he nailed it. He's a top-class player.
Ireland went 24-10 up, and you're thinking that's game over, but they just reverted into themselves, allowed Scotland in, and almost collapsed. What happened?
It's a strange situation. 24-10, we're coasting, and they leave Scotland into the game. I think the biggest, like, if we were beaten today, I'd be asking major questions about Mike Catt, the offensive coach, yeah, in the back line. Our back line has been very poor with ball in hand. There seems to be a sort of, the first thought of some of the backs is to actually kick the ball, whereas it should be to run with the quality of possession we were getting, and our attacking flair was not in evidence. The tries we got were kind of scrambled overs, like Tyke Byrne and that, and a bit of luck there with the first one, but offensively, I think we have been poor. We got enough possession. We won the line-outs. We won the breakdown. Our scrum was okay. We had plenty of possession on the forward foot, but our offensive running, our broken field running, our open field running was poor, and I would certainly be asking questions about that, because there is no doubt at 24-10 we should have put that game to bed.
Certainly so, and even the likes of James Lowe, who's brought into this team with a lot of hype in him about his attacking prowess, doesn't seem to get an awful lot of chances to attack.
No, and again, it's whatever sort of the overall team of that entire backline, and Gary Munoz in particular as well as James Law, their first idea is to kick and not hit for open space. So I don't know what that is. And I mean, like, when Lowe doesn't run with the ball and doesn't do that well, then you definitely won't be picking him the next day, because there's definitely major reservations about his ability to defend at that level.
Yeah, as well, Jameson Gibson-Park lasted the entire 80 minutes today. Were you surprised? Like, you got Conor Murray on the bench. Why not bring him on if he's on the bench?
Well, going back to our first point there, we were saying what happened to 24-10 when we didn't shut it out. I think if we brought on Conor Murray and he was standing at 9 with Sexton, that he would have shut the match out and put us into positions in the field where Scotland wouldn't be able to attack from. Gibson-Park is a kind of a, he's an effervescent type of scrum half, keeps the game going fast and all that, but Murray has a better head. He's the same sort of rugby acumen that Sexton has, and he could have come in there and put that game to bed. I thought that was a poor decision from the line not to bring him in, particularly when they were bringing in loads of other fellas. I mean, Murray, to my mind, is as good a player as Sexton is for Ireland, and to leave a man like Gibson-Park there, which is fine, he's good in his own way, but I would have left him there for the 90, I'd take R for the 80, I'd taken him off after 55 that way.
Some positives though, I mean, like the likes of Tadhg Byrne and Robbie Henshaw were immense today. A lot of talk that they could be starting for the Lions this summer.
Yeah, Tadhg Byrne is like, he's nearly man of the match every day.
Yeah.
Incredible bit of stuff, you know, and the Farrell wasn't going to pick him at the start, you know, Henshaw was awesome, like, and if you want a guy to stand up in the middle of the field, he's the man to do it. But, you know, with Ringrose and, you know, Keith Earls playing well in that, it's difficult to see why the back line isn't functioning. It must come down to a coaching issue, because the ability is there. Like, we have the strong man in Henshaw, we have the foil in Ringrose, we have the dancing feet of Earls, but we're not setting them off properly. It seems to be a mindset.
Yeah, it certainly does. And what would you expect now against England next weekend, Moss?
I'm looking forward to that immensely. Yeah. I mean, if we were beaten today, it would be an absolute disaster. So, because we won today, we're kind of up to second in the table, despite, you know, the other teams haven't played all the matches. But I'd be really looking forward to England, because yesterday England and France was probably one of the better games of rugby I've seen in 10 years. It restored my faith in rugby union again. It was one of those games. But if you saw today's game, then it was like as if you were watching a completely different game, you know. But, like, England could have been beaten by France. France played some wonderful rugby. They'll come to Lansdowne Road now with an entirely different mindset. England were desperate to beat France yesterday because they had to. Like, we had to beat Scotland today. We were desperate. Now we're in a situation where England and Ireland are playing, and I wonder who is the most desperate and who wants it more. But it'll come down to that. England are good, possibly on paper better than us, but they're the old enemy, and I'd never go against an Ireland victory in Lansdowne Road against England.
All the ingredients have been a cracker next Saturday night as well. Just finally, Moss, Simon Zeebo is leaving Racing 92 at the end of the season. Should the IRFU bring him home, and where would he fit in this Irish team?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you saw the way he played in the Heineken Cup final last year. He got two fantastic tries, the second one in particular. I mean, he's lost none of his zip, he's lost none of his flair, he's lost, you know, you see him on social media there, he's lost none of his personality, you know. But I would have absolutely no doubt that he should be back in Ireland's plans, absolutely no doubt. And I would also say that he should have been in Ireland's plans for the last 4 or 5 years. Right. Josh Smith did many good things, but in the end, some of his decision-making was quite poor in that Zeebo should have gone to the World Cup. Donnacha O'Ryan, who was Ireland's enforcer at that time playing for Racing, should have gone to the World Cup. I would have no doubt that Zeebo should play for our Munster and Ireland next year, and I would really, really look forward to that.
Fingers crossed that happens. Moss, as always, a pleasure. Thanks for talking to us this evening.
You're welcome, Roy.
Always a pleasure talking to Moss Finn. Always honest, always calling it exactly as he sees it. Always great to talk to the former Ireland and Munster man. And now it's on to England in the Aviva Stadium next Saturday evening. Should be an absolute cracker. Spurs 2-1 up on Tottenham at the moment. Eric Lamella had scored an absolute cracker for Spurs. A Rabona goal. It was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. Put them a goal up, but Arsenal have rallied back and they're now leading by 2-1. Alexander Lacazette putting the Gunners ahead with a penalty. 82 minutes on the clock there. We are going to talk football, and Cork City busy preparing for the start of the new SSC Airtricity League First Division as Cork City take on local rivals Cove Ramblers at Turner's Cross on March 26th. So look ahead to the season. I've been speaking to City Chairman Declan Carey about preparing for a season in a pandemic, the help Grovemore have provided, the financial situation of the club and more.
Yeah, I hate to use the old cliche, Rory, but it's been somewhat of the new normal, so to speak, from a footballing perspective. We got a harsh taste of reality from this last summer when, you know, the pandemic hit, and then we had to come back and games were behind closed doors and we were, you know, panicking a bit and rushing around to get different things organised to host the matches and working with the FAI on what the different protocols would be. But, you know, given the success now of the recent pre-season friendlies and also the experiences that we'll be able to lean on from last season, you know, we're well set up here. And look, everyone from the coaches and the players who, you know, the majority of which make up the squad from last season as well, you know, they're all, you know, well aware of what's ahead and what the expectations are, what the match night atmosphere is going to be like. So, you know, that's all building into the preparations for them. But from our perspective, you know, we've learned a lot as well from a budgeting perspective of how to plan for the season ahead and make sure that, you know, regardless of whether, you know, hopefully fans can come back into the stadium this season, whether that's in the latter half of the year or towards the end of the season, we just don't know. But, you know, we will plan for, you know, all eventualities here. And, you know, if that happens, it'll be a fantastic boost for everyone around the club. But if it doesn't, you know, we're well prepared for this season to have no fans inside the gates. But look, fingers crossed with the positive news on vaccines and, you know, maybe the possibility of reduced attendances, we'll hopefully be able to claw some of that back this season.
Now, the Grovemore takeover hasn't happened, obviously, yet, but the work they've been doing in helping the club to get to this point of the season has been invaluable.
Yeah, look, to be honest, the financial contribution that they made was 12 months ago hasn't really changed since then. But, you know, the members did ratify the call option agreement and approve Grovemore to come in and take over. That hasn't happened officially yet. Look, takeovers, Rory, with all football clubs around the world, they can take many months, sometimes a year, maybe more. So, look, Grovemore have given us assurances that, you know, they will not hold this agreement in perpetuity, I suppose, and you know, keep it hanging over us. And they want to take over Cork City Football Club. That's an absolute given. They've been honest and forthcoming with all of our negotiations with them to date. You know, they've never over-promised or under-promised anything to us. You know, our dealings with them have been super professional, and that's the way they will remain. And, you know, we sent an update to our shareholders yesterday on this and, you know, confirmed to our shareholders that, look, this will be resolved one way or another within, say, you know, the next 10, 11 months and before the next licensing period finishes, you know, for the 2022 season. But look, Forest is in charge at the moment. The board that we have in place is in charge. We make all the decisions associated with the club, and we're managing the staff and the structure of the football club for the foreseeable, and that's the way things will run. And we've got the club set up in a very solid footing now, and we're in probably one of the more better positions than we have been in the last few years financially as well. But obviously, look, that's a huge thanks to Grovemore from the large contribution they made to us about 12 months ago when, you know, we were in a very difficult position without a tax clearance certificate, without a license to participate in any FAI division, whether it be First Division or Premier Division. And look, we're here now and we're ready for that first home game against Cove Ramblers. And we're in a very, I won't say a very comfortable position, because that's an unfair thing to say during a pandemic, but compared to what we went through 12 months ago and, you know, even the season before that in 2019, I would have to say we are in a comfortable position in comparison, you know.
Is the Turner's Cross issue still the major stumbling block in the takeover, Declan, or what's the story?
Yeah, look, we're not privy to those conversations, really, Rory. They're essentially between two third parties. And we do know that Grovemore are liaising with a number of stakeholders and commercial partners around the club. You know, they do have the right to do that now over the next couple of months. And look, it's too late now for this season for them to come in and formalise the takeover. But, you know, we're confident that they'll be able to resolve any issues that they envisage with a potential takeover. And they've given us assurances that they'll do everything in their power. And when they have given us assurances in the past, we've had no reason to doubt them, given them what they've delivered so far. But look, for this season, we have already confirmed that we will be playing in Turner's Cross. You know, great news as well that we'll have the women's teams taking their games taking place in Turner's Cross as well, which is, you know, super exciting for them and something I personally and the rest of the board have wanted to pull off for a number of seasons now. And through the hard work of the staff and Aina Buckley in particular, we've been able to get that built into our new agreement with the MFA as well. So that's extremely positive.
Yeah, I'm just off the line with Becky Casson, actually, the new Cork City captain. She's buzzing about the fact that their home game is going to be played in Turner's Cross. And not only that, but I suppose the exposure of the Women's National League as a whole this year seems to be on the rise, and the work that Cork City have done in promoting the women's team over the last number of years.
Yeah, that's something, and you know, I've been very passionate about as well. Even before I was on the board, I helped out the women's committee with a lot of, you know, their marketing initiatives and just trying to build up the profile a bit. And you know, that has just grown and grown. Aaron Howie there looks after the media site for them as well, and Megan, who helps out, you know, the amount of work that that entire part of the club put in is just phenomenal. And you know, Becky there, like, she's a perfect example of the new era of player that we will be hopefully, you know, bringing into Cork City FC and helping to bring the club on even more. You know, she's a league winner, has vast experience in the league, and, you know, she's moved to Cork and, you know, it just raised the standard. And her, and along with the other players that have been, you know, called up to international squads and training squads, it's all moving in the right direction. And, you know, Ronan and Paul, who look after the first team, they're putting excellent structures in place. Jess Lawton as well has been announced as our under-19s coach as well. So hopefully that league gets the green light as well to go ahead this season. It's, you know, it's all looking very much positive in the women's side of the club as well. It's been growing every year and something we're very passionate about. And it's great to see the fruits of all the labour that's gone into it as well. And we're extremely proud of that entire group.
Season tickets, Declan, there's a number of people have been upset, I suppose, that they haven't been able to get refunds for season tickets.
Yeah, it's just one of those things, Rory. We're very unique with our club in that, you know, regardless of what division we're in, we'll probably be the number one club in terms of season ticket sales, and it's such a huge part of the club's overall income. And, you know, last year we even sold close to 1,000 season tickets. Such was the marketing drive that went into it before the season started. And, you know, unfortunately then, you know, this is not something that just impacted Cork City FC or the league. You know, the world changed dramatically last March, and unfortunately, you know, we had to pivot, and, you know, supporters gained access only to two games, and we you know, gave them a free streaming pass, and we worked as hard as we could to kind of alleviate the impact. But look, to be honest, the response, Rory, from us throughout the last, you know, 9-10 months from supporters about season tickets, they have, you know, proactively contacted us saying that they didn't want refunds. They had heard of other clubs looking into it, and look, across the league as well, it's a practice that most clubs and clubs all across Europe are exploring as well. And look, we will be announcing a new season pass package for next season in the coming days. It's something where we'll be able to give something back as well to last year's season ticket holders and give them a discount, and that's the least we can do, is now give them something back with this offering, and we certainly will. Obviously we've considered a number of elements of risk associated with this season pass. It's heavily focused on digital platforms, and you know, if the opportunity arises then to bring fans into games, those fans of course will be given first priority then to gain access, which is something, you know, City fans all across the city and county have been itching for the last year. So look, we've done everything we can with this, and you know, as you said, it would be an extremely difficult situation to put the club under if we were to facilitate refunds for all season ticket sales last year. It just, you know, I'd shudder to think what would happen. We'd probably be back in a very similar state than we were last year with trying to secure our license for the League of Ireland.
Is it a case, Declan, where you're not expecting any fans in the ground this year, and you've budgeted and planned for that?
Yeah, exactly, Rory. Yeah, we've you know, it's mainly we've done out our budget, and then we obviously have certain scenarios that are not really included in the budget, but, you know, potential bonus situations that could arise. And look, we haven't factored it into our income at all for ticket sales for this season. If it does happen, it really does change the overall landscape of our budget. Even if you had like two or three games towards the end of the season, let's say, you know, we qualify for a playoff and there's a semi-final at Turner's Cross and possibly a final or something like that, you know, that just changes the landscape considerably. But look, we've budgeted prudently for the last number of years. Our goal as a board for the last couple of years has been to make sure that Cork City FC is on a level footing financially, and that the club is never at risk of becoming another footnote in the history of Cork football clubs. You know, that's been our goal over the last couple of years. That's not what my goal was when I came onto the board, but, you know, circumstances dictated such, and it's been a very somewhat unlucky couple of years. But, you know, some of the budget constraints that we've had as well have been, you know, we've been victims of our own success in some regards. So look, we just have to take stock now of that and, you know, use this year as well as an opportunity to set us up for, as a platform for the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, and obviously getting back into the Premier Division is an absolute priority. But I mean, like, the First Division is a very hard division to get out of. Can the club survive a number of years in the First Division?
I think we can, yeah, because look, we've budgeted prudently and now we're in a situation where the first team doesn't, you know, prop up the rest of the club like it has been in the last couple of years, where, you know, if the first team doesn't have a successful season, you know, everything around it falls like a domino effect, and it impacts things like the women's team and the academies and the club staff. And, you know, we've set the club up in such a way now that the level of risk there is minimal. And even if that does happen, you know, we'll make sure that, you know, we keep the structures there in place that, you know, let's say if we have a season where we don't perform well with the men's first team, it doesn't impact the budget that we give Liam Kearney with the academy, or, you know, impact the budget with Ronan and the women's section. So that's what it's all about. We're a football club here, Rory, and we have, you know, an amputee team as well that have been impacted by the pandemic. And it's all about keeping all the teams. I think we're coming up on 9 teams now in total with the launch of the women's under-19s. And we just can't have the club be dependent on you know, the success of the men's first team. That's something that we've learned over the last number of years. It's just not sustainable for a club our size.
Streaming is obviously going to play a big part of this season, and I suppose the investment from the FAI to make sure every First Division game is covered has been huge.
Yeah, fantastic to see that. You know, we've been delaying our announcements of this season pass just as we try to understand what the landscape of this streaming would look like. But, you know, the streaming of the Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers President's Cup game last night was done using the same equipment that we'll be using for the First Division matches. And I was very impressed by it. You know, you can see the highlights there of Scales' fantastic goal on social media. And it was very good to see the quality there. And, you know, word has it as well, we'll have a very famous Red FM broadcaster as well as our commentator for the season. So very much looking forward to that, Rory, not naming any names.
Yeah, he's a handsome man, I've heard anyway, but I will wait for the official announcement.
Indeed.
But yeah, that's a massive boost, because the First Division is shaping up to be more competitive and more exciting than the Premier Division. Now, we're obviously going to say that because we have Cork City and Cove Ramblers in the First Division, but it is going to be massively exciting. And Colin Healy's built a very, very good squad that you would hope anyway is capable of pushing for promotion this year.
Yeah, exactly. And look, the opportunities for promotion in the First Division, you know, it goes to the top 5 teams. And, you know, will we be in and around that conversation? I think we absolutely will with the signings that have been made. To be honest, if you got Colin Healy on the air next week, he'd probably tell you that we were going to win every single game. And we were, you know, such is the motivation of that guy and the passion that he has, especially for this season. You know, it's what he's done to and the staff now he's put together, the structures he's put in place, given a, you know, a limited budget, obviously, that has been impacted since we've gone down to the First Division, and obviously the pandemic as well. But, you know, we're very excited. I think the Colin Healy effect, we'll call it, will have a very positive impact on the performances this season. And, you know, fingers crossed we're in and around that conversation. And I definitely think we will. You know, look, it was a very tight division last season. If you look at the points difference, there was, you know, even up to the last one or two games, teams could have flipped back and forth between the playoff positions. And, you know, that's something we would hope we're very much part of the conversation of, and we'll give it our absolute best shot this season for sure. And, you know, fingers crossed we're back in the Premier sooner rather than later, because make no mistake about it, we're very cognizant that that's where fans expect us to be, and that's where we should be. We should be in the Premier Division. And look, as you said, Rory, it does become a much more exciting First Division since we're down there, and there's other big teams there like Shelburne. And look, the derbies now against Cove Ramblers will be fantastic, albeit very disappointed that the first one of the season, you know, won't have any fans in attendance, unfortunately. But look, fingers crossed later in the year, in some of the other encounters, we'll be able to have some of the Cork population experience that game.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. March 26th, Cork City versus Cove Ramblers at Turners Cross. Declan Carey, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Rory. Appreciate it.
Yeah, always a pleasure talking to Cork City Chairman Declan Carey there. Really looking forward to the start of the new season. Waiting on the full-time whistle, and it's just gone. Arsenal 2, Tottenham 1. That is a cracking victory for Arsenal. I'm going to get you the full-time report on that one in just a bit. Now, yesterday, we played the first part of the chat with Phil Healy that Valerie and I did earlier on in the week. This is the second part following her incredible performance at the European Indoors last week, running a PB in the 400. The Ballonine Bullet herself talking to Valerie and me. And this time we're looking ahead to the Olympics.
Have you allowed yourself to think ahead and imagine what it's going to be like on the starting line of an Olympic Games when you become an Olympian?
No, I certainly haven't got that far ahead yet because of all the unknown, whether it will go ahead or whether not go ahead. But as an athlete, you're fully focused that it will go ahead. But I have so much work to do between now and then in making sure that I'm in tip-top shape for it. And like, it's months down the line, so I just need to focus on the day-to-day, building that to week and month to month and building that consistency up. And Olympics is the main goal, and obviously I will have the qualification competitions in between that will need to take the priority of the focus.
I mean, it's a quick turnaround, Phil, when you think of it. I know I seen online earlier on, are you one of the athletes that needs to self-isolate? Someone has come back with a COVID positive test.
Yeah, so that was unfortunate that there was a positive test, and luckily at the moment I wasn't part of that travelling group, so I just have to sit and wait. Obviously, take my precautions and get my COVID test on day 5 as well. So it is unfortunate, but look, this is what happens. This is what happens when travelling abroad, and athletes will be taking all precautions that they can take and following the guidelines.
So what's next now, Phil? What's the next event for you?
So it's going to be a short turnaround. So we'll go back into training now and we'll kick off next week properly. So this was a bit of a down week, and possibly we have World Relays in the start of May if Ireland are selected, and then it'll be just competing individually from about the end of May on, because qualification for Olympics ends at the end of June. So for now, it's about training and focusing on that, and take it on into the summer months then for competing.
What did you take away, maybe learn from the European final, Phil?
Like, I've messed up in many major championships, and say 2 years ago I went in ranked 5th at the European Indoor Championships, messed up my heat. So I think championship racing is different to producing a one-off race. And I can, like, what I can take is that I can be in there in the mix with these world-class girls now. Like, it was the quickest European final in a long, long time, and my time would have medaled at the last 5 European Championships, which is the last 10 years, because it's held every 2 years. So that is a great sign. And going forward, it gives me a massive boost and confidence knowing that I can be in with those girls and I've arrived at that level and ready to take it on.
What's the reaction been like since you've come home? I'd imagine everyone's kind of congratulating you and texting you and all that kind of crack from the weekend.
Absolutely. And like, my phone has been hopping since. And like, it's a bit mad and it's a bit surreal. And I was even saying to Shane, my coach, today, like, it doesn't feel real that I actually came fourth. And I know people will be disappointed that they came fourth, but like, I produced the best possible race within a 36-hour period of producing 3 races back to back. So it has been crazy, but people have taken so much from it, and it certainly has given so many people a lift. And whether it's older people or younger kids, like, it's great to see the transfer of the performance, and I'm hopefully can take it on and give more people things to shout about for the summer months.
I often wonder, are you doing these times in training, or do you wait for the big days, Phil, to show up? I'm often wondering, do these PSB happens behind closed doors? You're like, no, I'm waiting for the big day.
So we certainly have seen the signs in training, and it was just about sitting and waiting, because we decided not to race earlier on in January, February, just because we didn't want to take the risk of travelling abroad. I had the standard for European Indoors from last year, so I didn't have the pressure that way that I needed to chase a time, but I needed a time for seeding when it comes to what heat you're drawn in over at the championships. But I did have the signs in training, and I knew a good performance was there. But for me, doing it in training is one thing. I want the evidence of doing it in a race for me to fully believe it. So we did have the signs, and I did have a boost going in, but for me it all lies on the championship. And I was lucky to race in the micro meet that was held in Dublin about 2 weeks before European Indoors and produced a PB there. So we knew everything was going in the right direction. But when it comes to championship racing, it's 3 rounds. It's a short period of time. It's a different story. So I'm just delighted to know that I could do it and produce it on the day.
It looks like the Olympics, Phil, are not going to allow any overseas visitors or overseas fans this year. Is it a disappointment that nobody from home will be able to watch you compete in Tokyo this year?
Look, it is, but it would be a lot worse if the games were cancelled outright. Like, any athlete will take the games going ahead over fans being allowed, because as athletes we're focused on the performance. Obviously it's going to be a different Olympic Games in terms of like being flown home straight after your event, or that general buzz isn't there, or there isn't the normal opening ceremony and closing ceremonies and different things like that. But it's an Olympic Games, you get the opportunity to compete, and any athlete will make the sacrifices of fans in order to compete at the Olympic Games.
You did mention earlier on Paul Virgin RTE. I was listening on the radio on the way home. I know Rory was watching on the television. I was nearly racing down the road. I was like, well, gee, come on, Phil. I was roaring at the radio. But I think there'll be plenty of new eyes with the coverage of the Olympics this year when it goes ahead for athletics.
100%. And like, we are a minority sport. So usually it's rugby, soccer, GA that take the headlines on television. And like, we'd be lucky to get coverage maybe once a year for our national championship. So to have a weekend long of European athletics coverage with great commentary from Derville, David and Rob in studio, like, it gave the sport a massive boost, and it gave us a lot more fans. And to see, like, it's an individual sport, it takes so much sacrifice to get to the highest level, and people underestimate the level that it does take. So it was super to get that coverage and to get people on board to see what it does take to perform at that level, and hopefully they'll continue with that support right through the summer.
Well, Phil, it was absolutely brilliant chatting to you. Thank you so much for taking time out. I know it's your down week and we're interrupting it rudely, but we can't wait to see what you do next, and we're really looking forward to it. So congratulations again from the both of us, and we'll chat to you again soon.
Super. Thanks a million for having me on.
Yeah, always a pleasure chatting to Phil Healy. An incredible run last week at the European Indoors, and all systems go now for the Olympic Games. Still to come on the show, talking MMA with Darren O'Gorman. Up next, we're talking the Rebels Bounty with Cork PRO Joseph Blake.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
A good win for Arsenal over Tottenham today, coming from behind. Nigel Bidmead watching.
Arsenal 2, Tottenham 1, an eventful and entertaining North London derby which Arsenal deserved to win. Eric Lamela was both hero and villain for Spurs. He put Tottenham ahead with a delightful Rabona, but then picked up two yellow cards in 6 second-half minutes and was sent off. Martin Odegaard equalised for Arsenal just before half-time, and on 63, Alexander Lacazette was fouled in the area and the Frenchman scored from the spot. Spurs very nearly snatched a point right at the end when Harry Kane's free kick hit the post. Arsenal 2, Tottenham 1.
Now we're going to talk GA now, and the Rebels Bounty draw has been a big success with over €1 million raised by clubs so far, but the closing day for the purchase of tickets is drawing near. For more on it, I caught up with Cork PRO Joseph Blake. Alright, the Rebels Bounty has been a tremendous success. To talk to us more about it is the Cork PRO Joseph Blake. Joey, how are you, sir?
Hi, how's it going?
Thanks a million for coming on. I read in the Examiner that, like, there's been a combined profit in excess of €1 million from the Rebels Bounty. That means this has been a tremendous success.
Yeah, it's been a tremendous success. And that's actually over €1 million just gone back to the club, the clubs of Cork. So obviously on top of that, you would have your, there would be money going back to the Cork County Board, and there would also be money going for the prizes too as well. There's €500,000 in cash prizes this year, but it's been an absolutely tremendous success. And there's still, what, another week and a half to go. Thursday, March 25th, 5 o'clock is the cutoff deadline. So it's all systems go between here and then.
Obviously, the reason this is a success, Joey, is because the clubs have bought into this.
Yeah, and look, I suppose there was a bit of clubs were nervous, and I think a lot of people were nervous at the start when this was kind of flagged. I think it was back in September, there was a webinar held, and it was all explained about how, you know, clubs were going to be given targets. And but you know what? I think clubs really, I think the targets kind of focused their minds, and that they looked at this as a great fundraising opportunity, and that there wasn't anything else. There was very little else fundraising that they could do at the moment, because obviously the big fundraisers like your Strictly Come Dancing or your Lip Sync, all that has gone in the last 12 months. And also a lot of, we'll say, for example, the club lattos that would be done in your local pub and stuff like that, that's all gone too as well. So this was a great opportunity where clubs could take part and really drive it. And especially from a non-nine fan point of view, we have seen online sales rocket in the last couple of months, where people are just sitting at home. They could be anywhere in Cork, anywhere in Ireland, anywhere in the world, and they're able to log on to the Cork J website, go on to Rebus Bounty, and they're able to buy a ticket for their club. And it has been an absolutely tremendous success. I think it's surpassed anybody's imagination. And I think this has just the opportunity to grow and get bigger next year, when hopefully the restrictions are lifted and people will actually, you'll be able to go door to door selling tickets, or you'll be able to meet people in at matches and stuff like that and sell tickets. It's kind of restrictive at the moment because obviously people can't meet, and a lot of sales have been done online. But I mean, it's just been a tremendous success.
A convention last December, the Carbery chairman Tom Lyons said he was genuinely worried about the draw. Was that just a minority view, and was it just a case of like it was something new and it was something different, and I suppose that's what people were worried about?
Yeah, it's like anything else. When things are new and they're saying targets, and like Jesus said, everyone had concerns. I had concerns, and a lot of people had concerns as well. So, but I think what it did was it focused the minds, because where clubs before would, in the old county board draw, look, if they sold 50 tickets, if they sold 60 tickets, it didn't put them up or down. But here they were kind of told, though, well, if you're an intermediate club, you're expected to sell at least 70. And that kind of just, it kind of maybe over the Christmas period, it focused the minds. And we've seen clubs that were maybe selling 30 or 40 tickets in the last couple of years. They've gone out 140, 150. There's another club I know that was selling 30 or 40 tickets. They've gone over 200 tickets now. Mm-hmm. But we've also seen the bigger clubs in the city that are selling 300, 400, 500 tickets, and that's amazing. That's well done to them, and they'll make 30 or 40 grand profit out of this. But even the small clubs that might be making 2 or 3 grand in previous years, they might now make 5 or 6 grand out of this, and that's a big jump for them as well, because it means that 5 or 6 grand might cover their insurance, their player injury scheme affiliations, their affiliations to the county board. So hopefully, look, nearly every club has surpassed their target, so that means nearly every club is making money out of this, and there's still another 10 days to go. So I think great credit must be given to the there was a support committee set up of about 6 or 7 people, made up of county board officers and Conor Coonan. And what they did was, and what made it such a success, was they addressed the concerns. They met the clubs over Zoom, and they discussed this, and they said, look, they gave them ideas as to how to make it a success within their own clubs, and show, look, your neighbour down the road is doing this and they're making a great success of it. So maybe if you follow their model, it might work well for you too as well. It was amazing how fellas, and they might be on a Zoom call and they might be kind of saying things aren't going great. Next thing you tell them that the club down the road are after selling X amount, the Zoom call in quickly so they could go out selling straight away. Like, but no, but it's got, look, obviously it came out in the last county board meeting, the county chairperson Mark Sheen confirmed that over $1 million had been raised for the clubs. I think it was about 670,000 was raised for the clubs last year. So look, I think it's really helped reconnect the county board and the clubs, which I think is a big thing, especially over these difficult times. So look, hopefully in the next 10 days or so, there'll be an even bigger push and a bigger, more tickets sold. And look, at the end of the day, obviously, as a county board officer, I hope the Cork J do benefit well out of this. Mm-hmm. But the big winners are going to be the clubs.
Yeah, and obviously, excuse me, as you say, some time as well for people to get involved and help their clubs. What are the prizes on offer? I mean, there's some huge prizes.
Yeah, there's some great prizes. There are cash prizes. There's a total prize fund of €500,000. But so there's 30 prizes every month, and usually the top prize is either 25,000, 30,000, or 20,000. and it works its way down. There's 30 prizes every month, but the big one is the 100,000 first prize on at Christmas time in December. So I think that might solve a few problems for people who are going buying Christmas presents. So like first prize next December, 100,000 cash. Well, they say cash, I'm sure they'll probably write a check or transfer it into a bank account. I don't know, will the county treasurer be going down with a suitcase to somebody's house? But no, there's so total prize fund €500,000, and the prizes, 30 prizes each month, and the first prizes are either 30,000, 25,000, or 20,000, varying on the months, and working its way down. So look, there's a lot of prizes to be won, but I think the 100,000 euro first prize in December is a nice one to win.
Wouldn't be a bad Christmas present at all. So if anyone wants to get a ticket, Joy, they just get in touch with their club officers, is it?
Yeah, get in contact with the local club. But you can also do it from from sitting down at home and logging onto the Cartier website, and there's a link there to go to Rebels Bounty, and you can sign up online.
Just away from the Rebels Bounty, join me, like this time of the year, obviously you have the leagues going on, and it's a busy time of GAA as we all start looking into the summer, looking into the championship. How weird has it been, I suppose, for you not having any games to organise and plan, and has there been frustration, I suppose, voiced to you by the clubs that like we want to get back out and play?
Well, yeah, kind of, like obviously we have to take our guidance from the government, and we have to take guidance from Croke Park too as well. And I think it was actually this weekend last year when I think it was March 13th when the Taoiseach of Rearca gave the speech. I think it was a Thursday, or I think he was over in Washington actually when he gave the speech. And so we're effectively kind of on lockdown. I don't want to say lockdown for 12 months, but obviously there was a break during the summer. But it's been really difficult to know. I think it's like, I suppose from a personal point of view, I've probably found this lockdown the hardest, because we'll say last springtime, it was kind of a novelty for everybody, and you know, a bit of a break, the weather was good, and then everyone kind of went back kind of to somewhere normal during the summer, and then there was plenty of club games, and the whole club championship last year was a great success, and then I suppose another lockdown kind of came along then in October, November, the start of December, and I was kind of very fortunate that I was able to go to the county games, the Cork games. So that kind of got me through that. But I found this lockdown very hard, because the weather is poor, it's winter, and there's no games to go to. But I can understand club's frustrations that we can't plan. Like, I remember speaking to the county vice chairperson, Pat Horgan, over Christmas, and we kind of came up with a plan where we felt that maybe the inter-county might go back in February, maybe start the league, start March, and we had hoped to start our league games. You know, the clubs might be back training, start March, and that we would have been starting our club league games in the start of April, and we'd actually come up with a plan for that, and maybe start championship in the middle of July or towards the end of July. But that's all gone out the window now. So I can understand the frustration by the clubs and the divisions that they're none the wiser than we are. And but I suppose the people I feel the most sorry for are the kids, you know, because they are not able to get out and play and meet up with their friends. I know some of them are going back to school, but I look there, my nieces and nephews, and they're mad to go back playing. Even if it's just training in small pods. And look, you know, that's the people that I would love to see back on the pitches first, to the kids, even if it's just in small pods, playing hurling and football and camogie and ladies football and whatever, that it just gets them to go out of the house and develop their social skills, because there's kids there now that might be in senior infants in, we'd say, for example, in school, and they have their junior infants, when they were five, they were affected with this, with the whole the lockdown towards in the last year. So they missed out on maybe their first year playing Gaelic games. And if they don't go back playing soon, that they'll be concerned that they mightn't want to start it, or they might miss out on another year. So hopefully, look, we'd all be mad to go back playing soon. But I'd be hoping that the kids would go back soon, quicker maybe than later.
Is that a worry across the board, Joy, that kids who haven't been playing for the last year is just simply not going to decide to go back and play with their clubs?
Yeah, I'd be concerned about it because you know yourself, kids get into a routine, and there's, especially over the winter, there hasn't been much to do, and the all our kids might go off, and they, like during the summer, spring and summer, they might be obviously outdoors, but what you see with a lot of GAA clubs in the winter is that they're doing, we say, indoor stuff, be it in halls or maybe out in AstroTurfs or whatever, and that they haven't had that, they haven't had that routine, and it would be a concern that there's no kids that are maybe especially 5 or 6 or 7 who haven't had much Gaelic games or any Gaelic games. They might just want to, how do you say, get involved at that age. That's when you need to get kids involved at the ages of 5 and 6. And some of the kids mightn't have that had that opportunity so far. Like, because obviously last year there was a lot of the cool camps that were affected too as well. So look, that's a concern for everybody. But look, at the moment it's out of our hands. We can only do what the government say, and Croke Park listen to what the government says. So I mean, we're guided by Croke Park. So I would hope, look, I see a couple of articles actually in this week's the paper, this week's, that they are saying that there seems to be kind of a shift now to get to try and get the kids back on the pitches, especially when they're going to schools,
yeah,
back to school, that I think all the national schools, all the kids in the national schools are back this week. So it means that they are indoors. So I mean, it surely should be as safe for them to be outdoors in maybe pods of 5 or 10 or whatever the recommendation is, just to get them out and get them kind of interacting with each other again. And you know, I suppose, look, some people on here who might be listening to show up kids, like nieces and nephews, and they're just telling me they just want to get back playing.
Yeah, I think that's going to be key, and hopefully it can happen. As mentioned, schools are open, so fingers crossed they can get back playing sport very, very quickly indeed. Just a quick one, Joy. A Congress, there was a 16-team limit established, and that obviously kind of posed a couple of questions for the Cork Premier Senior Championships, but you're confident enough that it falls under that remit and everything will be okay?
Yeah, we would have discussed it beforehand. We had a special county board meeting the Tuesday night beforehand, and we voted, we spoke and discussed all the motions, and actually our county chairperson, Mark Sheehan, he would have been our delegate on the day of Congress, and he spoke about the matter, and he got it addressed on the about the whole divisions and colleges, and the way that we would look at it is that we have in our county premier championships, we have 12 teams, but running parallel to that, we would have our division and colleges. So in a way, they're probably team number 13 because they come into the county championship, the winners of the colleges division section, they come in at quarterfinal level. And I know there's two counties that are querying it, saying that if Cork get an exemption, then they should get an exemption. But I think the difference between us is that they actually have clubs, while we have colleges and divisions, and we're running parallel. So we'd say, for example, at the start of the competition, there's the draw done for the colleges and divisions, and then there's the draw done for the groups of the clubs. So look, our county chairperson, Mark Sheehan, addressed it, and I think he was told we might have to apply for a deviation, but I don't see any problem in that, seeing it was brought up at Congress.
And just very quickly, Joy, were you surprised to see Ron McCarthy's ban upheld this week, and what's the avenues open to him after that?
Well, to be honest, I can't really comment at the moment because the process is ongoing. So look, there was, I think, a verbal, I think the way it works is that they get verbal communication on these kind of things, and then there's a written communication sent to the county board and probably to Ronan too as well. So look, that will be reviewed, and look, as the process is ongoing, I can't really comment on it.
That's fair enough. All right, we'll leave it there, Joy. Thanks very much indeed for talking to us. For more information on the Rebels Bounty, visit gacork.ie/Rebel Bounty. But until the next time, Joy, thanks very much for talking to us.
All right, thanks, Merlin.
Yeah, always a pleasure talking to Joseph Blake, Cork PRO on the Big Red Bench, and the Rebels Bounty, a massive, massive success for all the clubs so far anyway, and still a couple of days left for you to get your tickets to enter into the draw. We're almost out of time. Going to talk MMA, and our good friend Darren O'Gorman returning to action next week in Cage Warriors, the Corkman facing Francis Nicolas LeBlond in a bantamweight clash as he looks back to get back to winning ways after suffering defeat in his last two. So I spoke to Darren earlier on today. All right, joined now on the line by our good friend Darren O'Gorman ahead of his Cage Warriors bout next week. Darren, how are you, buddy?
Good, thanks for having yourself.
Good, man. Thanks a million for coming on. Before we get to your fight, I mean, like, what's it been like training and preparing for a fight during a pandemic?
It's been different, to be honest. Definitely a lot less kind of classes going on around the place. You know, a lot, like, less jiu-jitsu based, less kind of just Muay Thai based classes going on. Still getting the bulk of the work in, but it's definitely, it's been altered and less bodies, but different.
Yeah, less people are in the gym, less for buzz, I'd imagine, as well, is there?
Yeah, I mean, the gyms aren't open, essentially. Like, you can get to there for, we get to certain places for sessions, just jumping around a couple of different gyms, getting sessions in with just people, like maybe like a handful of people in the gym.
So hardly ideal preparation, I guess, but I suppose everyone's in the same boat then, I guess.
Everyone's on the same boat, and yeah, it's not ideal, but it's not the end of the world. I mean, so still getting two sessions in most days, like three some days. Be one with a martial art based, and then like be doing like running or strength and conditioning. But definitely getting in one MMA, one sparring a day, and then one, as I said, something else, you know.
Yeah, just a lot of conditioning work by yourself, I'd imagine, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of, like, definitely more solo work than before, but it's not the end of the world, you know. So we get in, like, on a Monday, I'll start off the week, we got big glove sparring, and then Monday evening we do some MMA sparring, so I get a good bulk of bodies on a Monday, and then Tuesday is drilling and like MMA based work, and then I do strength conditioning in the evening time. Wednesday again would be MMA in the morning and pad work in the afternoon. Might go for a run in the evening, and then Thursday is the same as Tuesday again, and Friday is sparring and pads. So I'm definitely getting enough stuff in, like, that I'm content with it, but it's if you compare it to before, like, then, you know, it's not going to be the same.
We're 6 days out now from Nicolas LeBlond at Cage Warriors at 122. What can you tell us about him?
He seems like a bit of a pressure fighter. I mean, there's not a whole lot out there on him. From what I've seen, his last fight, he fought Sam Creasy, another fellow on, I think, Cage Warriors last September. And then before that, there's just one clip on him from like a UC MMA fight about 4 years ago. Very similar in both videos, though, to be honest. He's just a little bit faster, more improved in the more recent one. He seems to look like a pressure fighter. They keep referring to him as a judo guy in commentators, but from what I've seen, he's a lot of singles and doubles with wrestling. I'd imagine him to be trying to pressure me to the fence. Yeah, after that, then it's my own game.
Yeah, exactly. And once you get him onto the ground, then that's your world, basically.
Yeah, I'm happy to keep this one on the feet, keeping along with him, but as I said, with the style I see him kind of trying to play, I reckon he'll be trying to force me to the fence, which, let's see where it ends up.
Have you focused anything specifically for this fight now to try and sharpen your toolbox from previous fights, or
just mainly dealing with Southpaws? He's a Southpaw fighter. Other than that, it's been again, I like to see what they're about, and then it's just learning, you know, improving my own attacks from there, improving my own game. But yeah, dealing with Southpaw, just kind of slightly different, you know, you're veering off to the left a little bit more, as opposed to the other opposite direction. And yeah, other than that, yeah, just been my own game plan.
It's been a year since your last fight, when you lost to Conor Hignett back in March of 2020. A fight you were winning comfortably right up until the point he clipped you. I mean, like, have you watched that back?
Yeah, I've watched it back a couple of times. Not anytime recently, but yeah, a couple of times afterwards. It was a frustrating one. You know, as I said, it was wiping the floor with the guy. To be fair, he come in, kind of his overhand right was the one we had feared, like giving him the chance to take the fight. And credit to him, he took it, and he caught that shot. But frustrating one to look back on, right? Definitely, you know, I was wiping the floor with him. But it also shows that I feel like I'm able to hold my own with anyone that's in that division, you know. Up until that one shot, I think, as I said, it was 10-8 rounds, as far as I can remember. Like, so.
Yeah, I remember watching that fight live and just remember, I got Darren's going to win here, and I was great. Just that one overhand right, just that one kind of lapse in concentration.
It's a different ping off them, you know. So you get can't take your eye off the ball for a second inside there. Things like that will happen.
Exactly. Is there hardly going to be spectators at your fight next week, is there?
Nah, not this time. I think the lockdown put a spanner in the works for that. The intention was there, I think, that they announced it last December, and it was to go ahead for crowds to start applying to get, like, I think 50% or something. But then the next lockdown wave came, and I think that just put that out of the park.
Yeah, it's probably going to be weird, I suppose, fighting in front of essentially nobody, is it?
It's not too bad. The thought of it is worse than it is, I think. So you're in there, kind of, if you're focusing on that, you know, as I said, you've kind of got bigger task at hand when the bell goes, so it's not too bad.
It's a good card overall next Saturday night. You've got Paddy Pimblett on there, you've got a good title fight as well, so it's a pretty stacked card next week.
I've actually have to look at the full card on the night. I haven't seen the layout of the three nights, but it's Paddy on Saturday as well.
Paddy's on Saturday, yeah, taking on David Martinez.
That'll be a good scrap.
Yeah, it should be an absolutely great.
It's meant to be fair happening over the three nights of it.
Yeah, should be a cracking couple of nights ahead. Darren, just briefly as well, referee Neil Hall passed away this week, which is a massive shock to the MMA community in the UK and Ireland.
It's a shocker, right? It's sad to see him go. I remember he was over in Cork at one of our very, like, probably first or second.
One of the battle zone ones, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it was, yeah. I think I remember seeing him in Cork. I think it was my second fight, I think it was. And yeah, I've seen him around the scene since then. It's terrible, though, to have somebody go, you know, especially so young.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I remember chatting to him, a very, very nice guy at that Battle Zone card as well. Very finally, Darren, prediction for Saturday night?
I think I will knock him out with a head kick.
I'm looking forward to that, buddy. Mayor Darren, thanks very much for talking to us. Not going to wish you luck for Saturday, because you don't need a kid.
Thank you very much.
Not short on confidence is Darren O'Gorman. Anyway, best of luck to him next week against Nicholas LeBlanc in Cage Warriors. That's it from us. Thanks very much for tuning on. We're our podcast online very, very shortly indeed. RedFM.ie and from wherever you get your podcasts. Conor Halbone's up next with Green and Red. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday night, and happy Mother's Day to all the mammies out there.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.